This is Identity at the Center.
If it has anything to do with IAM, this is the go-to podcast. Now your hosts, Jim McDonald and Jeff Stedman.
Welcome to the Identity at the Center podcast. I'm Jeff and that's Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Not so bad. Yourself?
I'm doing great, man, but I'm wanting, just like I'm sure the rest of the Identity at the Center community is wondering, can we get an update on the Apple Vision Pro? Because for the rest of us regular folk, we can't afford such things, but you, my friend, have one.
I do. It arrived yesterday, so I've had it for roughly 24 hours, of which most of it has been either working or sleeping, but I have had a couple of hours now to play around with it, and my wife too, which is a very important part of this. There is a lot to cover here. I don't know if we have time for it, but I will say this. It is very expensive, and it is very impressive. The hard part about it is it's very difficult to demo and share with someone else. It is a very personal device. So anytime, like my wife and I were trading off last night, kind of showing different things and how it worked, you have to do an eye calibration for the eye tracking. You have to turn off passwords and pins, right, and all that stuff, so you can easily swap heads right there in the mask. So it is very difficult to share with other people, but my gosh, man, this thing is the best AR VR experience I've ever tried, and it's not even close to anything else that I've seen. For me, the killer feature has been actually the MacBook pairing and using it as like a larger screen. So I was actually playing around with it and like trying to edit the podcast on the Apple Pro in like a giant mirrored, not mirrored, but it's like basically like a virtual display. And it's pretty usable. Definitely first gen. It's heavy. It's expensive. Do I recommend it for most people? No, but it is extremely cool. And I am really excited about where this is going.
And this is coming from a guy, you've had several VR headsets. So, I mean, like, you're not just like some newbie who's impressed by whatever fell off the shelf.
No, and it actually came earlier than I thought it would. A couple weeks earlier than I thought it would be. And it's pretty cool. I mean, there's some pretty neat features, some cool apps. It's just kind of the very beginning of it. It's crazy expensive. It's really hard to recommend, but for most people. But if you get the chance, go to a store, try it out. If you know someone, try it out. I think you would be blown away with how good it already is. And if this is the worst that it's going to be, I can only imagine the future. I mean, it's going to get so much better after, you know, 2, 3, 4 iterations. The phone was like this. The iPad was like this. The watch is like that. I mean, it's crazy good. I am still torn at this moment whether or not I'm going to keep it. I'm definitely going to take advantage of the 14 days for the return, but it's pretty cool, man. I'm digging it.
So you're so happy, and it's only 2 days after you're crying in your Coke Zero, right?
I mean, yeah, like,
you seem pretty recovered over that. Not only did your team that you've always loved lose the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. but you went public on the Identity Center podcast and predicted a win and told Todd and me and Steve that we were all wrong, mm-hmm. thinking the Chiefs would come back. And I did say the Chiefs would come back because of Patrick Mahomes.
And yeah, that's exactly not going on a limb. It's always going to be Patrick Mahomes.
It wasn't really going on a limb. That's true.
Well, this is why you don't tune into Identity at the Center for football picks. I am 0-2 on the season. I picked the Bears opening week. I drank the Bears Kool-Aid. I immediately threw up the Bears Kool-Aid after that first game. He said, nope, they still suck. Forget it. The Niners, I am disappointed in. I feel like they had so many chances to win that game, and they literally fumbled it away twice, three times. You cannot give Patrick Mahomes and that offense that many tries to get it. And they held them to 4 field goals, which is crazy. They lost one of their best defenders by tearing his Achilles, just jumping, getting ready to go onto the field, non-contact injury. It was disappointing. I had some questionable coaching, I think, a couple of overthrown passes that could have been touchdowns. It's just, I feel like the 49ers lost it, not to take away from the Chiefs, because they definitely you know, deserve the win, but I feel like it was not the greatest outing for the Niners.
Yeah. Well, my biggest takeaway was, first, the hilarious commercials. I'd love to know what your favorite commercial was. Mine was, I don't think a lot of people picked this one out, but it was like Chris Pratt doing a Pringles can commercial, right? And young girl who's working at a counter is like, you know, you look like the guy on the Pringles can, right? And then everybody starts saying it to him. And what I thought was the most hilarious part of the commercial was he does Face ID on his iPhone, but it's pointed at the Pringles can and it lets him in. So I don't know. For me, I was just cracking up over that. But I also thought to myself, man, Las Vegas is a really cool city. It keeps getting cooler every year. And now they've got that sphere with, it looks like a marble rolling around. I mean, mind-blowing stuff.
And you could see it from, you know, from the sky as you fly in. So I was just there a couple weeks ago, and I'm flying in at night, and there's this giant yellow smiley face spinning as we're, you know, landing it at the airport there. And it's very cool. I think what I'm most impressed by is how high quality the image is. It's very high, you know, dynamic resolution, right? Things like that. But also the frame rate is crazy. It looks super smooth, super fluid, not janky at all. It's really cool. I'm looking forward to someday maybe getting closer to it and maybe even getting inside to see a show and what that looks like.
Well, you know, I mean, we're going to be back there in Las Vegas for Identiverse. We should have the discount code on the next episode. I'm really going out on a limb with that because I know we don't have it in hand.
Let's hedge our bets in the next few episodes. How about that?
There you go. We'll have the discount code. So anybody who's planning on registering, come on back to your favorite podcast. We should have that code here very shortly. It should be the best code available publicly. So we've got that conference coming up. Other conferences on the agenda, Identity Week, which is in Europe, America, and Asia. So we have a discount code for that as well, and it works for any of the locations. So the Europe one, Identity Week Europe, is in Amsterdam, June 11th through 12th. Identity Week America, which you and I will be at, is in Washington, D.C., September 11th and 12th. And Identity Week Asia is in Singapore, October 22nd and 23rd. I think if anybody wants to pick up our airfare, first class, of course, yeah, we'd be more than happy to be there as well. Again, IDAC 30 gets you 30% off registration.
Yeah, and we'll have the link in our show notes, make it easy for people to find. But yeah, we'll be at the America one. And yeah, if you want to fly us out to Amsterdam or Singapore, I've never been to either. I have a bag and I will travel. Maybe I'll bring my Apple Vision Pro if I still have it at that point. Who knows?
It's a great offer.
It is. I don't know. I can't wear it in public, man. I'm not that guy yet. When I see a bunch of other people doing it, maybe, but not yet. Another cool thing was we saw a recent Apple podcast review, and they were commenting about the episode that we did with Ryan Galuzzo from NIST. And so I thought that was very cool. So definitely appreciate the folks who take the time to review us on the podcast platforms. It definitely helps us. And it, you know, continues to motivate us. The other thing is the person liked the hockey talk and totally agrees with me. So I'm totally bringing up this review because they agree with me on playoff hockey. So there you go.
I'm going to guess that it was Ken Myers from GSA, who's been a friend of the show and been on the podcast a few times. And the reason I'm going to guess that is that he put a post on LinkedIn that read very similar to this. So if I got that right, Ken, send me a message. If I got it wrong, send me a message too. I'd be okay with that.
There's lots of people who think I'm right, so you never know. It could be any number of people out there.
So today's main topic, we're going to talk about passkeys. We've got somebody from San Francisco who may have also been crying in his beverage of choice on Sunday. I'm not sure, but I'd like to find out. Why don't you introduce our latest guest?
Yeah, so we've got Daniel Gruby, again, product manager at TikTok. He was with us on stage at Authenticate last year as part of our kind of live keynote extravaganza, we'll call it. Welcome back to the show, Daniel.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So are you a Niners fan? I have to ask.
You know, I was born in San Francisco, so I feel some sort of loyalty. But actually, my dad's from Detroit, so I grew up in a Lions household. So he was not too happy with the 49ers knocking out his favorite team. It was supposed to be somewhat of a Cinderella story for him, I think, after many, many years of just disappointment. So, yeah, our household was sadly watching the Super Bowl.
It has been a while. You know, I would not have been upset if Detroit had beat the 49ers. I'm glad they didn't. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like it's time. I think it's been like 40 some years. And I feel like they're also a little bit ahead of schedule, which is good because I think the NFC North is up for grabs. But now we're talking NFL. What we want to do is talk about identity and access management. We didn't really get a chance to really get into your background on stage, and we kind of had a shortened show just based on timing and things like that. So why don't we start fresh in this episode? So tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into the identity space? Is it something that you chose or did it choose you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it kind of chose me, to be honest. So interestingly enough, I have a technical background, but it was mainly applied to social sciences, especially in grad school. I analyzed social networks to look at how they evolved over time and if we could predict the evolution of social and economic networks to better understand where we think those types of things are going to be going. So a lot of that type of modeling that I did applied really well to social networks and things like that, not only in the real world, but obviously online. I actually also started my career as a private investigator, which was pretty interesting. I think that this set me up very well for understanding identity in a way. I got that job just through a few random languages that I speak that can be very useful in private investigations, especially for the people who go into that field. And the places that they previously worked at. And so for me, I think it was really interesting because a lot of that job was about taking a ton of information given to you by clients and then having to dissect it, pare it down, and tell a story with it. And for me, it was all about figuring out who are these people? Who are these, you know, where are they? What are they doing? Why did they do it? Understanding identity and then motivation from that. And telling a story. And for me, I think that was very, very interesting. And I did that, you know, in a lot of languages with a lot of people from a lot of countries. It was super cool and really led me nicely into using kind of my technical background, my investigations background into employing this in a more product focused way where I can actually build things that are, you know, using identity for security and understanding the intersection between the two.
And so you work on, I guess I introduced you as a product manager at TikTok. You got to help me understand, what does that even mean? Like, what would you say you do here?
Yeah, of course. I think being a product manager at TikTok is similar to being a product manager at most tech companies, right? What you're doing is identifying opportunities for the space that you work in. I primarily work in security, identity, access management. And so essentially figuring out where are opportunities using, you know, certain data or user research that you can get from interviews, things like that. And then building features that will help users based on the needs that you've identified. And, you know, writing those documents, working with engineers, designers, things like that to build these things, testing them, understanding if they work, and then launching them on your app so they can be used by people worldwide. So everything you see on your TikTok app is built by some team, you know, who's trying to understand if this is something our users would like to use.
The constant, march of progress, right? And how to improve things. I think most people are probably familiar with what TikTok is. If you're not, I guess just get out from under the rock, right? And go online. What is a feature that you think is underutilized when it comes to TikTok? Something maybe that you like to use and maybe not like needs more commercial promotion, right? Or something like that.
So for me, one of my favorite features at TikTok that I use a lot, I would say is the collections feature. So I find myself, I love using TikTok and the For You page and stuff. I feel like I always get entertaining content. I especially love it for recipes. to be honest. So for me, I love cooking, and I kind of, you know, use a lot of the recipes I see in my For You page and try to copy them at home. But collections is something I use to put them all together, essentially, and after I bookmark them. So bookmarks can kind of get, you know, there's a lot of them, things like that. This just helps me to kind of organize them and then share them with people as well, which is cool. And I don't know how many people are using it, but I find it very useful for me and kind of how I use the app.
Seems kind of like a new spin on like the bookmark, right? I think everybody's familiar with like the bookmark in a browser. It's like, hey, how do we pull this collection? I mean, clever name, by the way.
Building on the library theme, yeah.
I would imagine that your role has a lot of interaction with sort of, you know, that growth and that user experience that happens there. Are those things competing interests? Can they be complementary? Like, how do you see your role sort of driving and affecting those areas?
Yeah, the team that I work on at TikTok from the product side, we do not only experiences on the app, like signing up, logging in, and security, but we do all of them, you know, as a team. And so for me, Passkeys has been a great way of providing users with more security, but a frictionless experience as well, meaning that it's just much easier to, you know, log in, things like that, which can kind of show you how you can utilize good user experiences that are also secure to make the process faster for users and easier. So I think that that's a great answer in the sense that we have found ways, especially with new technology, to make these experiences, especially security experiences, much easier and much better for users.
Daniel, I'm wondering, what was the hot topic in identity at the time that you joined TikTok?
Yeah, again, like what was interesting is when I joined, I was approached by one of the engineering teams to basically talk to me about passkeys. It was especially a discoverable credential, which we use at TikTok with passkeys, right? Where you just show it up, show the passkeys automatically to the user that are saved on their device. It was all very new at the time when I joined, and they had already, they were a team internally that had already focused pretty heavily on FIDO technology and how this can be used, especially for employees to secure their accounts, things like that. And so they approached me saying, this is also something that could be used in a consumer context. And so it was a very hot topic from an identity perspective as something that we had already invested in to increase security for employees. And why not use that technology to increase security for our users also? So for me, that was kind of one of the first conversations I had when I joined about a cool opportunity that we had in our identity and security space.
Yeah, I feel like passkeys is kind of the best of the user experience and also, you know, improving security. And there's so few things you can do in the identity space that do that. So I think this is kind of a story that anybody who's dealing with an external user population can really take from it. I mean, you guys have also experienced a lot of growth in the past few years. That's a challenge as well as an opportunity. What are some of the challenges and opportunities that you've experienced?
Yeah, I think that having new users is definitely an opportunity for security because it gives you the ability to help users and guide them to the, you know, most secure option possible for them to use, right? So for us, this is an opportunity to, you know, allow users to create a passkey earlier in the user experience when they're creating an account. I know that for a lot of companies or a lot of, you know, people, adoption or creating a passkey might be a bit of a tricky or user experience or a challenge, right? Whenever you have new technology or something you have to add to your account, it can be difficult to figure out how to ask users to do it. And so when you have more users who are joining or signing up, you have an opportunity earlier in the user journey to give them better security. So I view this as an opportunity for us to help users secure their account at an earlier stage in their journey on TikTok.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you guys got on passkeys, it was really new, right? And so there's kind of like, you almost had to kind of break the barrier of like, people don't even know what you're talking about. Now it's becoming more at least within our industry, like kind of the common parlance, but I'd say outside of our industry, people generally still are just coming up that learning curve. I think being that early adopter kind of hints to me this innovative culture, and I think the opportunity to improve the UX in an innovative culture probably gives you the opportunity to take some more challenges or make some more risks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it has afforded us the opportunity to understand where we can improve, right? We have embraced passkeys at TikTok. So we know that this is a secure way and a frictionless way for users to log in. And so we also understand where there, I think, is opportunity to grow or challenges that we noticed with some of the technology initially, as it's provided by Apple, Google, Microsoft, or people who are providing the technology to relying parties. For us, a lot of it is, making it more flexible for user experience, right? Not only is this a product that you can use to sign in, but also to authenticate your identity in various scenarios across a platform or across the user journey, as well as signing up for a new account. So we're looking at other ways that we can, utilize the technology that's provided to us in different scenarios. And I think the biggest opportunity there is a more flexible way of, messaging to users the difference in the different scenarios. Right now we have the sign in with passkey prompt, but maybe in the future we'll have other versions of that that will allow us to more easily communicate with users without extra steps that they could also, authenticate with a passkey, or they could sign up with a passkey, things like that. So I think that for us, noticing that using, the technology we're given helps users to more quickly understand it, especially if it's from the native OS that they have. But also we love, to see more flexibility in what users are seeing to address more scenarios.
So here's a challenge for all the TikTokers out there. How do you make passkeys go viral in a way that it becomes trending of like, sign up with passkey, right? I mean, is that like, am I too much of an IAM nerd to think about in that perspective? Like, what's the communication marketing plan? How do we roll this out from a communication standpoint? TikTok video, man, why not?
I know, yeah. I would love to do a TikTok video about passkeys. That sounds awesome. For me, yeah, I want it to go viral also on our platform. That would be so cool. I have no idea how to get there. That would be really fun. I feel like that's something that maybe you guys could make the video.
Oh, there we go. We can carve up part of this and make, funny faces, put weird filters on us, and then talk, some sort of passkey prompt type thing. I don't know.
There's something there. I feel it.
I feel like this is something that everybody wants and frankly probably should be using in the age of sort of getting away from the password, which everyone knows and hates. But is 100% adoption really the goal? Is that even realistic to think about from a authentication standpoint?
And I guess when we talk about this, it's probably just around everyone, right? Like, can all people who are using passkeys across all the different platforms, using the technology that's provided to the relying parties, can relying parties expect their apps to have all users with this? I'm not sure. I guess from a practical perspective, right, there are requirements for a passkey. So you have to have screen lock enabled, you have to have Bluetooth turned on, you have to have your biometrics enabled, or I guess you could use like a passcode, things like that, but not everyone has a passcode or a pattern or something on their device, depending on if you have like Android or iOS. So I think that there are just certain conditions that are required by Apple, Google, Microsoft to create a passkey that will probably just naturally, make some users ineligible, as well as like the OS version, right? It's only available for iOS 16 plus, Android 9 plus. So right now, I don't think so, simply based on the conditions that are given to relying parties, that it's probably not realistic to have 100% based on that. But over time, as more people meet these conditions, then then it is a possibility for sure. But I think it's just a matter of time more so than anything else.
I feel the same way because I think there's still, you know, accessibility concerns. We want to make sure that it's available, right, for everybody. And you certainly bring up a lot of the things that I think a lot of people think about is, okay, sounds cool, that's great, but there's, you know, there are certain use cases or scenarios where it's just not going to work. So what is the fallback mechanism? So I'm with you on that one. I guess from a feedback perspective, and maybe this is a weird question to ask, but has anybody, like, have users commented like, hey, this is great that you have it on here? Is it just identity that are like, hey, you've got passkeys, right? Or are normal people, in quotation marks, also giving feedback on it?
Yeah, I think this is interesting. I'm not going to lie, I definitely Google like TikTok and passkeys. I want to see what people are saying, all kinds of stuff. Based on just what I've seen, it seems like we've gotten positive reception, which is great. I don't think I've seen any specific feedback like you're saying around that, but I think generally when we looked at the response after announcing that we were going to be doing passkeys in July of 2023, there was positive response. I think people have seen us as embracing the technology and have welcomed that. And we've seen other relying parties adopt the technology also after that. And even before, obviously, we weren't the only ones at the time. So I think that generally, yeah, we're seeing a positive response for this. We know users are using it. So I think that that indicates to us that people like it.
Yeah, one of the things we like to do on the podcast, Daniel, is make sure that we don't lose people, right? And we're talking about passkeys and we're halfway through the episode, but I think it's important to maybe level set on what passkeys are. Obviously, I think, well, let me ask the question. Passkeys replace passwords.
I think that's the intention, right? To create a passwordless experience for users. So it's, to me, this is my own, you know, thought, but that was the naming convention, right? Instead of a password, it's a passkey. I think the naming even sounds like it was intended to replace a password. It feels intentional from the way that it's been branded as a product.
What does a normal end user have to do to start using passkeys? Is there any kind of like special science that they have to do?
You mean just in general? I mean, not really. I mean, we talked about like their eligibility conditions, but for the most part, you just have to create it. Right now, it looks like most apps are using passkeys just to log in for users. So you would just create the passkey so that you can log back into your account. I haven't seen anyone, you know, removing passwords or anything like that. So I guess if we're talking about creating a passwordless experience, that's still something in the future for passkeys and relying parties, especially as passwords seem to be, you know, they've been around a long time. You know, it's always hard to get rid of something that's like old reliable. I think that's probably what I've seen is just the login scenario being tackled primarily by all the relying parties adopting passkeys right now. So it seems like that's kind of where we are at this stage.
Now, if I'm a practitioner, I'm thinking, okay, maybe passkeys would be the right thing to provide to my users, right? Maybe we're looking at multi-factor authentication, which seems like a baby step in the right direction when passkeys are out there as an option. But I'm not sure about how much money I'd need to spend. You know, from your standpoint, did you need to invest money into hardware or additional software in order to make this work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I talked about before, I think there was actually a team that's dedicated to exploring, developing, understanding FIDO technology that we have at TikTok. And so they had actually already created an SDK to be used in the enterprise scenario, you know, to create passkeys, things like that. What was great for us is that we could use some of the technology that we had already developed at TikTok to be able to then make it available for consumers also. So there's no new hardware, obviously software. But yeah, it made it great because, you know, it was something we as a company had already invested in to increase security. And so we were able to use that to also make our consumers more secure as well, the people that use TikTok, who want to have more security on their account.
Yeah, if I'm thinking about rolling this out, I mean, is it, do I have to do all big bang for all of my users at once, or can I pilot it? I'm trying to get an idea of like how big is the rollout? Is the effort a lot of, you know, mostly focused on just putting the technical pieces in place, or is there kind of a change management of like letting people know it's coming, be here tomorrow, it's here, here's what you need to do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, right? I think with any new technology, adoption is going to be a challenge, right? Like we talked about, it's new. So education, right? Do people know what a passkey is? So if they see this, are they going to do it? If they don't know what it is, they might be confused, which can change your decision if you want to invest a lot in it or not a lot. It can also change your decision. Do I need to educate users on what this technology is before they create it so that they understand things like that? There definitely enters a lot of these questions when you're trying to roll out passkeys on your platform, especially because it is a new technology. I think that what's great, what we found, especially working with things like the Credential Manager API that Google provides, it actually is, it's very efficient, you know, as a platform to provide this technology to our users. So I think if you're questioning about whether or not you want to adopt it, I think recognizing that there are tools that you can use provided by, you know, Apple, Google, things like that, that make it an efficient technology to integrate onto your platform, that's great. Maintenance is going to be, you know, easier potentially than other things. And so I think that's one big benefit. But yeah, again, I think adoption is probably the biggest challenge with any new technology, especially with something like passkeys. If people are on an app to, you know, talk to their friends or watch content or something like that, you know, are they really interested in interrupting that experience to create a passkey? I don't know. And I hope they are. I hope that they want to. But of course, I think it is important to start small if you can and make it available to your users. I think that we should always make security available when possible. So there's ways that you can start out small. Offer it in settings, right, to start with, and see if people naturally are going to try to go do it. Try to ask them to do it in user experiences where it makes sense, right? Like account recovery, logging in, things like that. So that next time they can use it, things like that. So there's probably ways to do it slowly and just test out where it works best for your user base, depending on the app that you have and what the app is meant to do.
Yeah, one of the things, so Jeff mentioned we met at the Authenticate conference, and I was thinking one of the things that I think has made this so possible and so successful is what the FIDO Alliance has done with passkeys overall. And I'll tell you, we were at Identiverse, and like the amount of universal appreciation, acceptance for FIDO2 and passkeys, it's like, it's really like nothing I've ever seen. There's always seems to be, maybe not polarization, but there seems to be, you know, some percentage of people who think, okay, that's not good. But it doesn't feel that way with FIDO2. I mean, the investment that they're making to build a community around it, investment they're making to build standards like user interface standard, contributes a lot to, it's got to become ubiquitous, right? It's kind of like nobody has to explain to you how you do one-time passwords with an SMS text, right? It's like we've gotten so many of them, it's ubiquitous. Passkeys has to get like that to get to the, kind of the adoption level where it belongs. But maybe you could talk about your interfacing with the FIDO Alliance in terms of how they've supported the community at large and you.
Yeah, the FIDO Alliance has been, you know, one of the biggest, I think, supporters for us in getting this out there, and also connecting us with teams at Google and Apple to ensure that our adoption and integration of passkeys is the best experience possible for our users. So we definitely owe a lot to them in the sense that they have helped us to, you know, roll this out to our users as fast as possible by, you know, connecting us to the right teams, the right people, where we can ask questions, solve problems quickly, things like that. So definitely has been a huge for us in making this happen at TikTok. And also, excitingly enough, if you look at the website, TikTok is now on the board of directors for the FIDO Alliance, which is awesome. So we're getting to be a bigger part of the conversation, which is really exciting. Talking about, you know, the user experience, things like that, and just being, you know, a bigger part of the alliance itself and contributing to the future of FIDO2 and this technology.
And they have great documentation too on the website with the user guides and sort of not deployment guides, but, you know, implementation and kind of things like that. I know that our friend Andrew Shikiar, who's over there, you know, spent a lot of time getting it up and running. And I think it definitely shows. I think it's, you know, top of class, first class, whatever we want to call it, right? But from a documentation standpoint, I put it right up there with what I've seen from other organizations. So definitely, I would imagine probably pretty helpful to have something like that to fall back on. So, okay, well, how does this work? But then also, like, the big brains that you're all also interfacing with, like, oh, you know, how do we challenge, you know, how do we satisfy this use case or whatever this challenge may be? Can I talk a little bit about the security side of things? Because I feel like this is an area that, you know, we want to make sure that people are secure, they're using things. Passkey is a big step towards that for sure. I'm totally on record as being a big fan of AI. I'm a fan of it. I am not afraid to admit that I subscribe to a couple of very specific AI services, right? And I'm exploring and testing with it. One of the things that I've kind of tested with is this idea of impersonation. And at some point, I feel like I'm going to be at the stage where I can actually do an entire Identity at the Center podcast with all the voice samples that Jim and I have put together over the years. And I wonder if anyone would notice. I have to imagine, you know, there's lots of companies that are, you know, encountering this. There was one in the news, I think it was last week, aboard, you know, somebody got tricked for $25 million using deepfakes and video on a Teams call. I mean, it's crazy how easy it has become. And I think it will continue to get easy. That seems like it's a pretty big threat. I guess, what are some of the challenges or concerns that you see, and how do you kind of stay ahead of that sort of thing?
Yeah, and based on what you said in your example, it sounds almost like people were impersonating other people to phish the person.
Essentially, yeah. It was, I'll butcher it. Someone will definitely correct me, I'm sure. But the idea was people were on a Teams call, and they were using deep fake video to pretend to be different members of the board and having conversations, and essentially tricked this more junior member into wiring a whole lot of money to an account. And, you know, next thing you know, 20 some million dollars, I think it was, or I think it was 25 million, something like that, was gone. And it was predicated on this idea of, I don't even know what we would call it. It's phishing, but it was a very elaborate, you know, phishing exercise to do it with deepfake video, deepfake audio, multiple cameras and sessions running, right, to be all that. I mean, it sounds pretty sophisticated to me, but it's just going to get easier. And it's something that I've been thinking about for a long time, is how do we protect against that sort of thing? Do you have any ideas, thoughts? Does it keep you up at night like it does for me? Like, what are your feelings there?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone is probably afraid of the ways that technology, especially new technology, can be used for, you know, malicious purposes, like you said, using things like AI to trick someone into doing something. It sounds very scary, right? For me, I think when we talk about passkeys, and this is something that you can see the FIDO Alliance talks about a lot, so you said you had someone from Nest as well on the podcast. I think the reason why people endorse passkeys so much is because it is phishing resistant, right? It's been cited in, you know, the White House memorandums, NIST, like a lot of organizations at the governmental level have endorsed it for this precise reason. And so I think that passkeys is a great way to provide more security to users in these scenarios where there might be some malicious use of new technology to try to get people to do things that they probably shouldn't do. And so I think that there are new, like you said, not only maybe are there new technologies that can be used for bad purposes, but new technologies that can be used for good purposes. And so what's great is I think that we are focusing on giving people the defenses that they need to protect against this.
Yeah, and I looked it up. It was 25 million deepfake with the chief financial officer. And I feel like if there was a phishing resistant mechanism, right? Say, that's fine, right? Let the person do the initiate the transaction. But if the CFO had to use a phishing resistant mechanism to have the transaction go forward, it would have gotten stopped at that point, or at least the chances of it progressing would have been lower, it seems like.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it would have been more complicated. I know that at Authenticate, there was a presentation that demonstrated this kind of scenario, right? And I remember the woman who presented it was showing how you could fake someone's voice and, you know, get the code from someone, things like that, showing how even if we think sending text messages or OTP codes to your email, you know, is a good way of, you know, authenticating identity, that there are other things that someone might do if they have enough motivation to get that information from someone. And she showed in her video how she did that, which was, I thought, really interesting and kind of what you're talking about here, I think, and how passkeys or other phishing resistant technology can help to prevent that, and how it would have stopped her in that, you know, fictitious scenario.
So we've had a pretty exciting conversation. I'm glad we're able to reconnect after our Authenticate show and kind of bring you back and have a little more, you know, deeper conversation into it. I want to end the show on a lighter note, as we normally do. And we're all travelers. So I came up with the ultimate question that is going to cause controversy upon controversy: window seat or aisle seat? Which do you take on a plane?
Yeah, definitely controversial for me because I have, I think, the minority opinion here. I'm an aisle seat person, which I think people are really against. But this is only because...
Okay, yeah, defend yourself here.
Yeah. Okay, let me defend myself. Okay, so maybe on like a long haul flight, I'll choose like a window seat, right? Because I want to sleep. But I'm so bad at sleeping on flights, like unimaginably bad. I went to Tokyo in December. And I'm not going to lie to you, I played my Switch the entire time on that flight.
What
embarrassing. That's like
Zelda?
10 hours. Zelda. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. I was playing Tears of the Kingdom. Yeah. I love Zelda more than anything. It's just so fun to just run around. Like I'm just looking at things. I'm not even playing the game. I'm on a safari. So, but I don't know. I like the aisle because I like to have control in this situation. And I like to be able to choose when I get up and like go to the bathroom, things like that, blah, blah, blah. I'm the gatekeeper of the bathroom for my row. I'm the leader of the row, you know, so I want
to
assume
get
that.
Past you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to pay the toll to get through, you know.
Show me your TikTok account. Do you have pass keys enabled? Exactly. Okay, you can pass.
Exactly. This is our adoption strategy. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's a controversial opinion. But
this is definitely. Jim, yeah. What's your controversial stance on this? I think I know what yours is, but...
I'm unapologetically aisle seat. And I kind of have wide shoulders. I'm not saying that in a bragging way, but I kind of have to lean out of the aisle. If I'm in a window seat, I'm very cramped. What I think is controversial is if you were to say middle seat. And I've actually met someone who said, I like the middle seat.
Why?
Because if, well, here is her mentality. And she was a smaller frame person, so that helps. But she said if she's got the window seat, she gets too claustrophobic. She feels like she's trapped because there's two people keeping her penned in. But on the aisle seat, you know, I've run into this. I've been kind of a road warrior for a long time. Is if you're hanging out into the aisle, it seems like the flight attendants like ramming the the beverage cart into your shoulder. And it's like, I'm not hanging out because I'm a bad person. I'm hanging out to give the person next to me some extra room.
You're so supposed to say you're hanging out because you're so swole and jacked. You don't fit into your one seat.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the Super Bowl commercial with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Neighbor.
Neighbor.
Hey, neighbor, don't run that luggage cart into me. Yeah, that wasn't funny. Anyway.
I'm going to isolate that and use that for something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Make it a song. Make it a viral.
There
TikTok
we go. We just went viral.
Yeah. That's our passkey video. We've just made it.
My only exception, I'm taking way too long to answer this question, but my only exception would be that if I have like a super early morning flight, I do like the window seat because then I'll put my head against the side of the plane and kind of sleep. What about you, Jeff?
I used to be aisle and now I'm window, but I don't care so much. So what's the most important for me is to have under seat storage, because I always like to have my bag near me. I generally do not check any baggage, so I'm usually on carry on only. Like everybody, I've talked about it, right? I like one bag travel as much as I can, have stuff underneath me and have to worry about overhead space and just kind of go. But I am, Dan, I'm pretty similar to you. I am a terrible sleeper on flyers. Can't talk today. On planes. And I'm getting better at it, but I still have challenge trying to like do a long haul sleep flight. Even if it's like a lie flat sleeper, it's not happening for me. So I'm the same way. I will either be playing a game, watching movies, doing whatever it may be, right, to kill the time. But I am window now, purely for the fact, for the most part, is when you're boarding the plane, everyone is banging to you in the aisle, in the aisle, in the aisle. They're, every time someone comes and goes, they're getting you. I'm actually the opposite of you, Daniel, though. So for most flights, I'll be window, but for a long haul, I actually prefer the aisle because I want to have more direct access to getting up, go to the bathroom, stretch legs, you know, whatever it might be. So I'm kind of a little flip-flop there. And I'm sure, you know, there are strong opinions either way, but that's kind of my take on it is what's most important for me is under seat storage. Generally speaking, the window seat has pretty consistent under seat space. Sometimes you get those really lame aisle seats that have like the power box or whatever, like sticking halfway in and you can't get your bag even under there. I hate that. So it's generally safer for me to pick a window seat. That's a hill I'll die on, and I'll fight anyone who wants to come at me at that. All right. I think that's probably a good way where we can leave it for this week. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time again to be with us. Hopefully we'll see you at a conference in the future. Maybe Identiverse, maybe Authenticate, maybe Identity Week America. We've got discount codes galore, so hopefully you take advantage of that. But yeah, appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
We'll go ahead and wrap it there for this week. We're on the web, idacpodcast.com. We're on Twitter or X or whatever it's called by the time you listen to this, at IDAC Podcast. We're on Mastodon at IDAC Podcast at infosec.exchange. Connect with us on LinkedIn. I'll have a link to Daniel's LinkedIn profile if you want to ask him questions, maybe about his passkey experience or, you know, in a polite and nice way, disagree or agree on the aisle or window seat choice. And I'll have links in our show notes as well for all the discount stuff that we mentioned for the conferences, and obviously you can connect with Jim and I. We love it when you hear from folks. It's great when people leave reviews. So whoever left that review, you know, talking about how great the show was, and especially for agreeing with me on the hockey talk, you know, 100% gold star for that person, and keep those reviews coming. So we'll leave it there. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk with everyone in the next one.
You've been listening to Identity at the Center. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit the website at identityatthecenter.com and find us on Twitter at IDAC Podcast. See you next time on Identity at the Center.